and looking toward the next game, you know, when something like that happens, so you're with Matt Duchene, obviously a veteran guy, making a mistake like that, do you talk to him between games, try to keep his head up for moving into game four?
I mean, that's something that just happens. I mean, there's I don't know, 20 offsides a game, and obviously we scored on that one. But, yeah, that happens all the time. And, yeah, I don't think you should be worried about that.
Overall, are you getting enough out of the Duchene line in this series so far in terms of creating opportunities and the things that you expect from them?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they're out there working. I think, you know, we got to try to do a, you know, a good job here tonight and go through some things and see if we can sit with those guys tomorrow and try to help them get, I think they've had some looks. I think we'd like to see a few more or the opportunity to score, but I think it's a couple things. So it's certainly something that we'll look into and see if we can help those guys, you know, get better and try to find some solutions so we're better for game four.
Oh, the Duchene line, a very popular topic of conversation the morning after game three. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And make sure to visit rocknashville.com. It's your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. Joe, I know that you've been wanting to get to this all show. We've talked a little bit about the Matt Duchene offsides play itself and the impact that it had on the game. That's been the number one story on Pred's Twitter since the game ended yesterday. You came out with a column last night on The Athletic talking about that play and just some of the things in the aftermath of the game yesterday in Game 3. I will open it up to you, Joe Rexroad. The floor is now yours.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, look, I wrote a column, and I've written a little bit about this before with the Predators and media access. And it was some last year in the playoffs had some conversations with them. I want to first of all make some things clear. This is not, and I've had some comments on the column that I've kind of responded to, and I knew there'd be some comments, which is, you media people whine and complain. You don't, you know, who cares if you didn't get Matt Duchene after the game? It's not about that. Look, I'm not angry at all. Okay. I'm not angry about this. When they didn't make him available yesterday, I wasn't surprised. I requested him. I was told, you know, that they collectively decided not to make him available. I wasn't surprised by it. I took it as an opportunity to write about this because this is something I wanted to write about more, and I will continue to because I think it's an NHL thing that needs to change. So let's be clear about the Predators. Their PR people, I think have great relationships with them. I think they do a great job.
Yep.
They just helped me get, families, wives of players to write a story about that. And they were fantastic. They are helpful. I think they're helpful with a lot of us in terms of, you know, getting players on the phone, things like that. So it's not about them. It's bigger than them. It is about the NHL not mandating that you have open locker rooms after games, and that's especially in the playoffs. And I wrote in this column a comparison, okay? Anthony Firkser is a great example to me. Last year, this is the Titans tight end. He got nailed, dropped a pass, it turned into a pick, went the other way.
Yep.
The Titans, the NFL, the most popular league in this country, they say you are going to have an open locker room. Every single person in that locker room will be available for a half hour. You get to talk to whoever you want. Go. And they sit there, and we go talk to them, which, again, if you're a fan right now, you might be saying, who gives a crap? I don't care what you guys do.
Right.
I watch the games, and I don't care. And that's fine. But I think a lot of fans, especially fans who do pay a lot of money to go to these games, do expect to hear from people who are involved in plays, good or bad, win or lose.
Well, so, they want to hear from the $8 million center who, I'm not going to say lost in the game, but that mistake played a big role in them losing the game. Fans want to hear from them.
Right. And here's the thing. I don't have indication that Matt Duchene said, I don't want to talk.
Sure.
Now, I don't know, and I'm sure it didn't sound fun to talk. If this was a normal playoff game, not in the bubble, and we have to understand it's the bubble, so it's already restricted.
It's different.
But this is still, even if it weren't the bubble, I'm not sure we would have gotten him. And that, to me, is a huge problem. So let's go to Firkser. Firkser sits there. Not only does he answer questions about this play, he has multiple groups of people coming up to him and asking him. And I was kind of hovering around there and like, man, young player making $570K, take, and again, it's not malicious, like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
You know, Matt Duchene, should you be benched and banished from Nashville forever? No. Like, what did you see on the play? I mean, it's, look, I understand people are going to say, well, what's he going to say? And that's fine. The point is, it should be an expectation that he would be available. And the larger point here is the NHL is not as popular as the NFL. Probably won't ever be. Hockey is more of a niche sport than football in this country. But I think the NHL could help itself a lot by having people available, by saying, go talk to people. Not, okay, you've asked three questions, get out of there. And I know different teams may do this differently, but for the most part, and I've talked to a lot of reporters around different, some are different than others. It should be uniform, open talk. Because then what you get is you get better relationships, you get more just sort of off-the-cuff conversations, and you get better stories.
Right.
And the NHL should be very interested in that. The NFL has figured out there's going to be negative stories. There's going to be stuff we don't like talked about. There's going to be stuff players don't want to be asked about. But, man, open it up, and ultimately we're going to get more coverage, and it's going to be better for us. And the NHL has not figured this out. I don't know why, but I'm not going to stop talking about this stuff until it gets better, because it's got to get better. It's for the good of the league. I truly believe that.
Right. And like you said, this is not a Predators problem. This is an NHL problem. And speaking as someone who has worked for the league, this is an NHL problem. There's no question about it. I've been in every locker room in this league many times over. This is an NHL problem. And it's one, look, there's some differences between the NHL and the NFL from a logistical standpoint too. Like, you're playing all the time. You're playing almost every other day. There are times where you have back-to-backs and your plane ride is, you know, very shortly after the game is over with at Bridgestone Arena. So that's probably a situation where, in reality, being a media member and a journalist, I would love to have the whole room open and to be able to hang out in there for a half hour and get good conversation. Probably in a back-to-back situation, that's not realistic. And I get that. There are some logistical challenges with it. I do think the NHL has a real opportunity, especially with this bubble and how successful it's been. And I get it. There's, you know, health concerns, and that's going to take primary, you know, precedence over everything. But the spotlight is really on them right now in a way that it really hasn't been before. I mean, you've got the NBA playing alongside with it. There's a lot of people watching these hockey games, and there's a lot of people maybe watching your sport for the first time. And I think, both from an NHL access standpoint, but also, like, the players, they got to have more fun with it. Like, if you watch an NFL press conference, certainly an NBA press conference, players show some personality. They have some fun with it. I understand it's the media. And, look, I'll be the first one to admit, there are a lot of our colleagues, Joe, and I'm sure I've been guilty of it many times as well. Sometimes we ask some stupid stuff. I get it.
Oh, and yeah.
We ask some real dumb stuff. I'm not saying we're without fault, because we make a lot of mistakes too. But the NHL's got to do more to promote itself. There's this culture in hockey that, like, you don't want to put yourself over the team.
Yes.
In a way, that's what, you know, fans like that. And in a way, I think that's endearing, because it's all about the team. And I get that. I respect that. I think that's what makes a guy like PK, like, so polarizing, because I'm not saying he's putting himself over the team, but he shows some personality. He's out there. The attention gets on him. The NHL needs more of that. And I think to help that, be able to talk to everyone, be able to have, you know, open access all the time. And that helps, like you said, create better relationships and have better stories. So it's, to me, a league issue that needs to at least be looked at, because – I think you have a real opportunity here if you're the NHL to help grow the game. I really do.
Yeah, and the point's been made to me when you compare with the NFL. Well, look, it's 82 games. Think about all the different availabilities, you know, during a week or during a season. It's a lot. So it's a lot on these guys, and I get that. I'm going to take another example, though. Most of my career covered Michigan State football and men's basketball. Tom Izzo, for his entire career and still now, has – open locker room after games. Open locker room. And his reasoning has been, look, these guys all want to play in the NBA, and this is what life is like in the NBA. The NBA, you have pregame and postgame, full open locker room. So covering that team, I mean, a freshman blows a game, he's surrounded by reporters after the game. I remember a 2004 loss to Wisconsin. Chris Hill was a player on that team, missed a free throw late. They lost to Devin Harris. They lost the Big Ten championship. It was just like these guys were bawling in the locker room, bawling.
Yeah.
They couldn't speak through their tears, but we were in there talking to them. And look, I know that it's not pleasant, but it's also a situation where you are telling a story of this, of the reaction too, that frankly, I do think fans, I mean, the fans were feeling the same way. And that's another thing here is like fans feel not as bad as Matt Duchene, but they feel miserable about it. And maybe it's not just that they want him, you know, to be interrogated, but they'd like to hear his feelings, like that he feels like they feel. I think Matt Duchene would have been great yesterday talking about this situation.
He's been great ever since he got here.
In fact,
yeah.
Matt Duchene is probably the most like Subban in that locker room in terms of being open and having some personality and things like that. And the opportunity is not even there. So I'm thinking about years and years of covering unpaid college kids who, of course, it's the expectation that you answer for whatever it is after a game. And now we have these professional hockey players making millions, and it's just they go into the back room and hide from us, and two or three are brought out for 90 seconds to talk. That can't happen.
We got a text in on the text line from Drew that says, where's it going to stop, though? Next, you're going to want college football locker rooms completely open.
Well, it's not happening.
Yeah, that's definitely
that's not going to happen. But
that's not happening at
all. I can tell you from experience from covering Alabama, they want to control their narrative. That's why when Alabama has availability for players, they choose the players. You don't know which players are going to get there until you get there.
But well, that's college, right?
There's a difference between college athletes and pro athletes, right?
Yeah.
This should be a huge one. I just told you about a college team that doesn't do that. And even though Munson, I don't know how Alabama is, but like Tennessee. Okay, Tennessee still brings out several guys to the room after the game and spreads them around. They have a press conference and they have guys. So you can go, I'm going to go talk to this guy, or maybe I'll talk to this guy. You have choices and you can get not all the exact same quotes that everyone else has, which, again, for fans, to me, I think people like different kinds of things and like more information. And so, again, that's a college team, unpaid guys, compared to this. The NHL has got to recognize this and look at the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball and say, why aren't we doing what they're doing?
Yeah, it's funny because it's the sports, and this is no knocking. This is no knocking MLS. This is no knocking NHL. But let's face it, the NBA and football kind of run sports. Baseball's kind of died down a lot. And it's funny that those are the two sports that really just don't put themselves out there like that. And then we get fans that come up to us and be like, oh, why aren't you talking about X, Y, and Z? Or why aren't you talking about X, Y, and Z? I'm like, yeah, we would, but here's the thing. There's little restrictions of, like, we ask for these people sometimes, and sometimes we don't get them for that reason. So, and it's the two sports that primarily, you know, don't get a lot of coverage, and hence the reason why. That's why when people complain about ESPN always showing the NBA and always talking NBA and college football and football, that's because they got access to it.
So it's their product. It's their product,
and
too.
It's their product.
That's the big part, too.
Yeah. But the access still has something to do with how it's covered. And the NHL has a great opportunity. And you're right, Robbie. I know we have to go to break. But you're right that some of this is definitely the fear of putting self above team in the NHL, which is fine, but it doesn't have to be at the expense of something like that. There's a benefit for everyone, and the league in particular has got to be able to see that.
We'll continue the Preds conversation on the other side of the break. Bob, hang with us. We'll get to you. Also, take the rest of your calls, 615-737-1025. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Our good friend Bob has been waiting patiently through the break to talk some Preds. Bob, go ahead. Thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
All right, taking my call. I have a couple of comments. Am I correct that the Predators have never won a playoff series without Mike Fisher?
I believe you are correct. Let me think about that. No, you are correct. You're exactly right.
Bring him out of retirement.
Well, not that, but since he's left, their psyche seems to really be, I don't know, fragile, for lack of a better term. And that's my first comment. My second is this. I'm afraid that their core group has probably just on the downside of their, you know, their career, even though they're pretty young, but you look at them like they've all had serious injuries. And it, you know, it seems to me like their better days are behind them in terms of their – I think that their window is closed, and I'd like to know what y'all's comment is on that, and I'll listen out there.
Hi, thanks for the call, Bob. Look, I think you're going to get a lot of – if this series doesn't end well for the Predators and they're out against Arizona, you're going to get a lot of the window closed talk. I'm not sure how open your window really is or shut your window is in hockey anyway. Like, there's – a certain degree of, hey, get in the playoffs and just see what happens. We see that. Like, do we think the Predators' window was really open in 2017? Like, I don't know. I guess that depends on who you ask. But they got to the final.
I mean, so. I thought they had a pretty good-looking young roster.
They did.
But, yeah, no one picked them to make that run. I don't know. That's an interesting – I never thought of it the way you just said it there. Because I did think after that, okay –
yeah.
There's a window now. And the next season, they did back it up with the President's Trophy.
Yeah, like, it's interesting, like, when you look at this group, I don't know that the players are on the downswing of their career. But I also don't know, like, when you're talking about the core. So that's what? Johansson, Forsberg, Arvidsson, Yossi Ellis. Like, how much better are they going to get? Like, I don't know the answer to that either. Because what Johansson just turned 28. You know, Yossi's 30. Ellis is getting up there, too, in terms of, you know, late 20s, early 30s. Forsberg's 26. So, yeah, they're probably not quite at the point, at least in my opinion, where they're on the downswing. But I also don't know how much better they're going to get either.
Yeah. No, I mean, to me, if this goes the way it's going and they don't win this series, I think there will be some kind of major change in the offseason, and probably should be, because the mix is not working. And the question is, you know, what can you, you know, who can you move? Who should you move? And how can you remake this to be competitive?
Yeah.
Going forward, or are you looking at like a complete blow up? I don't think you're looking at a complete blow up, but you want to have some of these guys who you've paid, and you want, and frankly, you need some young and cheaper supplements for them, and just some sort of a remake. I mean, I think that now that may not do it. It may be that it's like at some point David Poile has to look at a complete blow-up, but I don't think they're close to that right now.
I don't think so either. But, you know, it's interesting now to have this conversation because, you know, look, Predators very well could come back and win this series. I think they've been the better team. So it wouldn't surprise me if they won the next two games. Now, I think it's going to be difficult to do so. But, you know, we were having a conversation similar to this heading into the series. Like, okay, what happens if they lose this series? How much pressure is on this group? What does David Poile do in the offseason? A big guy that came up in those talks was Ryan Johansson. And so far in this series, Ryan Johansson has been outstanding. So how much do you weigh the playoff series and what he's doing right now versus what happened in the regular season? Do you just kind of chalk it up to a bad regular season? He got his mojo back with the guys that he's comfortable playing with. And you don't want to, obviously, if Ryan Johansson's playing like this, you don't want to trade him. No. You don't want to blow that up.
No doubt.
You want to leave him alone and let him continue to play this way. So then, if he's out of the conversation, not going to trade Victor Arvidsson, you're not going to trade Philip Forsberg, well, then your options to really like change this roster dramatically are limited, because at that point, your big money guys are Duchesne, which has been here 1 year. You're probably not getting rid of him. Turris, whose contract is going to be very difficult to move based on how much money he's getting paid. And then you've got Yossi and Ellis taking up a ton of money, and you're not getting rid of either one of them. So, like, the change that you really see is Granlund, but he's an unrestricted free agent anyway.
And so is Craig Smith.
And so is Craig Smith.
And I could see both of them being elsewhere next year. I think it's possible.
I think it's somewhat likely Craig Smith comes back, but I definitely could see both of them being elsewhere next year. But even that, like, it's not a ton of change to your core group. So that's the challenge you have if you're David Poile. Like, if this doesn't work out and you lose this series, how do you change this group? Like, what do you do?
Yeah. And Will, one loss away from getting into that.
Yeah, like we're not going to get totally into that yet, but it is just it is something that you can't ignore around this conversation.
I mean, I still – look, I don't – you said you're not going to move like Ellis. Probably not. But who the heck said, well, Shea Weber.
That's true.
There he goes after that 2017. No one. So I'm – like, don't underestimate David Poile for doing something that we wouldn't think he would do.
Sure.
But I agree with the Johansson thing. Look at him in this series like, oh, my gosh. Again, you're also saying –
where gosh, is this all the time?
Like 80% of that, and we're not in this series right now. We're just doing this stupid round robin to be the one seed.
But right.
On the point that we've been talking about, Robbie, a couple more items, you know, on that that I want to just throw out. You know, well, you mentioned MLS, and I, it's very early. I've seen some things on that side that, again, it's like, be more like the leagues that are totally open. I hope that that is how Nashville SC goes about things moving forward. Yes, you can talk to whoever open, talk, you know, their post game was very restricted too. Like that league, much more than the NHL, you know, needs
much more than the NHL.
Yeah, much more than the NHL needs as much openness and coverage as possible. So you've got to, from the top down, make that possible, make that a priority. You know, again, I want to reiterate on this thing. There are a few people who are covering the Predators on a daily basis. You, Adam Vingan, Paul Skrbina, you know, the guys like Justin Bradford, you know, and Jeremy Gover around there a lot. Our guys, you know, Chase McCabe and Darren, like Gover, you're coming back next year, right? Gover's, yeah, come on, Gover.
I know he's put up this like facade of retirement.
He's getting all these going away presents, but he's coming. You're not allowed to leave.
He's like Brett Favre.
You know, so for those people, that's who. Like I'm, you know, the guy who comes in and writes a lot during the playoffs and here and there during the regular season, but I also feel like it's a little easier for someone like me to talk about this stuff than it is for all you people who are doing it on a daily basis. So again, it hurts the daily people more than someone like me. This is not like a personal grudge thing. It's like, it's a frustration with the league. And I just don't understand why they don't see this.
Got a text in on the text line that says, this sounds like you want clicks. Having availability has nothing to do with fan base size.
Here we go. No, I don't want clicks. It's not about clicks. It's about look, what's good for a sport. You can hate the media if you want, but we are a necessary evil. We're all part of this gravy train, okay? If you're on our side of things, you got to be able to recognize this, okay? We are part of this system. Now, we should do our jobs professionally and not be cheerleaders and not be beholden to these leagues and be able to call balls and strikes. It's not about clicks. It's about access provides better coverage and helps a league, or if it's not there, hurts a league. And I think the NFL is a great example. They get it. They are not afraid of the quote-unquote negative story because they understand that just be out there more than anybody else.
Taylor Lewan. Perfect example last year.
Great example. Thank you.
Gets popped with PEDs. He's out there the same day talking.
They have a press conference for Taylor Lewan to talk about. And Muncy, you brought this up before the show. They have a press conference for Taylor Lewan to talk about testing positive PEDs. He took all kinds of questions. I threw a bunch at him. A bunch of other people threw a bunch at him. He took them all. He answered it. Look, some fans are like, I don't care. I don't want to hear it. Well, you're not like everybody, okay? This is accountability and how it should be. And I'm going to say again, I think Matt Duchene would have embraced talking. But the instinct is, well, it's a bad thing, so let's not have that out there. No, that's not the right way to do it. Taylor Lewan's a great example. I don't think that happens in the NHL. Let me give you another example. Our guy, Ryan S. Clark, who covers the Avs, unbelievable story in The Athletic about
Jacob Slavin
and their adoption of a black baby and all the challenges they've gone through. It's a tremendous human story. And, again, this is an example of, obviously, you know, the team
NHL,
helping, you know, and making this story happen. This is not putting yourself above the game. This is an important societal issue that is a human story of a guy in the league. There are so many great stories. And any team in any sport, in any league, more of that. And if you have a different philosophy than the NHL has, you will have more of that, and the benefits will far outweigh the negatives.
No question about it. When we come back, we're going to switch gears, talk a little college football. Chris Vanini of The Athletic will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning. Switching gears now, talking some college football, and to help us do that, we bring in Chris Vanini from The Athletic, also a Michigan State alum as well, which I'm learning, Joe. I mean, the Michigan State people are everywhere, Chris. This is unbelievable.
Michigan State Mafia.
That's right, and I know they were all over Tennessee as well.
And
Joe and I go way back.
Yes, and by the way, you know, the Michigan Daily, the U of M, that's we have a football game every year with them, and they usually beat us because they have a way bigger staff. I have a lot of excuses.
Yeah.
But we had an alumni game. Gosh, how long ago was that, Chris? Like probably about 9 years ago now.
Maybe. 2011, I think.
Rexo DeVanini all over the field, dropping bombs. We destroyed them that night. I'm still living on that one, Vanini. You ran some great routes out of the slot that night.
And Joe was great even when he got injured and went to the hospital.
You went to the hospital?
I did.
What happened?
I broke a finger and separated his shoulder, but it was well worth it.
That's dedication right there, my friend. Very nice. Chris, thanks for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. Just the reaction you had to UConn officially canceling their football season yesterday. What was your reaction when you saw that news?
I wasn't stunned. I had done a story on UConn a couple days prior where I was talking to Randy Edsall, their head coach, and he had said, you know, he was going to leave this decision up to the players. He felt that not enough people across college sports were doing that. That was right before the Pac-12 unity stuff came out. So he wanted players to make a decision, and he also had a lot of skepticism on how exactly a season was supposed to happen. It was taking 10 to 12 days for UConn to get tests back. They were isolating players. They didn't have any positive tests, but it was just less than a third of the team was able to do every workout. He said nobody had told him how they were supposed to do games, locker room, social distancing, that kind of stuff. So when the news came down yesterday morning, I wasn't totally surprised. UConn's also a little unique as an independent program that has been losing money, but it's still a pretty big deal that an FBS college football program has shut down its season.
Yeah, Chris, you also did a story, really interesting story recently on officials. We don't think about officials, but not much during everything else that's going on. But for one thing, you've got a lot of guys in there who are higher risk, yep, of course, older, and there's a ton of, you know, protocols and changes and challenges for them if a season happens. Explain some of those that you found out in this piece.
Yeah, I mean, we know the teams are going to have to do different things. We know the coaches are as well, but the referees are, like I said, they're in a vulnerable age group. They're not contracted, or they're contractors. They get paid per game. And so they're trying different things. Refs are going to probably drive the games, so they're figuring out who lives near what teams. They're not going to have handheld whistles that you blow. They're going to use an electronic button. You got to wear masks. They're going to get tested just like everybody else before the games. They're going to have their meetings generally over Zoom the night before in case somebody gets sick. They're practicing in case they get down to as many as six people. So they have a lot of changes going on as well. Conferences usually run the referee groups. They may switch between each other just based on locations and overlaps like that. So replay officials are their biggest concern in terms of the age group. They're generally the oldest people, and they've told people, you know, you can opt out this season and it won't affect your status. A couple of them have, it sounds like, but not many, and everybody's just kind of hoping that they can get to the season.
Chris Vanini on the line with us from The Athletic. And Chris, yesterday the Big Ten players come out with their letter in the Players Tribune. We saw something similar earlier in the week from the Pac-12. What's been your reaction to the players in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 coming out with their list of requests and demands? And what have you made of the players kind of speaking up through all this?
Yeah, it's really a continuation of what we've seen for a number of months now in terms of players realizing that they have a bigger voice and that they have leverage right now because administrators need a season to happen. It was a number of months ago we'd see players speak out about what they saw as racial disparities or racial injustice on their team or in their city. You know, Iowa, Clemson, Oklahoma State, stuff like that. And so this is, it's kind of the next step of that, and it's more organizing with everybody else. The Pac-12 obviously was a wide variety of demands, stuff that involved revenues and endowments and stuff like that, along with COVID-19 safety and protocols. The Big Ten one was just about the safety and the protocols, and that one seemed both more reasonable and stuff that could get done or was already getting done, stuff like testing three times a week, stuff like a medical red shirt if someone has to miss something. So they already have players have a line to Kevin Warren right now. He's already been speaking to a number of athletes. The night before the schedule came out, he talked to at least one player on every team. So there has been a dialogue there. It sounds like there's going to be more going forward. So, and it doesn't sound like the Big Ten players are threatening to sit out yet, at least compared to the Pac-12 one, which did. But this is just continuing. Players are realizing more and more that they have leverage and that they have power when they organize.
No question. I mean, I'm waiting for the SEC players. That they're next up on this. But I think, yeah, there was a big difference there, obviously, with the Big Ten statement. There were a couple things on the Pac-12, list of demands that, aren't realistic at this point. I do hope, Chris, I've been saying this all week, that all this stuff serves to strengthen the name, image, likeness, inevitability that is coming, that I feel like the NCAA has already made it clear. They fought against it, of course, all along, but also, you can see they want to cap it. They're going to try to limit as much as possible. To me, it's just you make that an open market, and a lot of these other things are not really issues anymore. And do you think that there's – am I making too much of a leap to think that some of this stuff maybe benefits that?
Yeah, I mean, the Pac-12 one mentioned that as well, but the Pac-12 doesn't really have that type of ability to make that decision. But yeah, I mean, name, image, likeness is something that, it's the Olympic model. And they could have done it college sports could have done this years ago and saved itself all sorts of troubles that we get to at some point. Because the more and more you're denying stuff to these kids, the more and more they're going to organize and eventually demand even more than that. So it's weird because the NCAA, kind of supports it, kind of doesn't. They want Congress to sort of write the bill, then they want Congress to approve their bill. They want an antitrust exemption, which is a big part of this. And it's just been a complete mess. On top, you throw that on top of everything that's been going on this year. And, Congress has more important things to do right now. And yet the NCAA is really trying to get them involved. So I don't know how and when this is going to end. It has to end with players getting their name, image, and likeness rights. I'm just not exactly sure how we get there yet.
Well, you knew you were going to get this question. What's going to happen, Chris? Are we having a college football season this fall, this spring, at all? Give me your crystal ball.
I guess at the beginning of August, I was like 50-50 that we get to the start of the season. Finishing the season is a whole other issue that seems very difficult, but are we going to start the season? I'm a little less than 50-50 right now. It's just the big question everybody has is regular students come back to campus in 2 weeks in most places, and is there going to be a large outbreak? Generally, what college students do, that tells us it's probably going to happen. Are there going to be outbreaks on a lot of teams? Is it going to be on just a couple teams? That's the big question. Nobody knows. They put out the schedules for the most part so far, and it makes you feel like the season's almost here. It makes it feel like it's real. But every commissioner we've talked to has been basically like, this is just a snapshot in time. Things could change a week from now. Things could change a couple days from now. They just want to kind of get that ball rolling just in case we get to the end of August and the season can be played. but there are a lot of athletic directors and commissioners who are doubtful we can when get there. We're just going to have to wait and see and put our faith in college kids to be safe and sanitary. So, yeah.
not very inspiring.
So, yeah, that's actually a good motto for 2020. So, yeah.
Chris Vanini from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to join us, man. We appreciate it. And thanks again for educating us on the legendary Rex Road to Vanini connection. I mean, that's outstanding stuff.
Absolutely. Great memories. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, appreciate you. When we come back, we'll dive into a little bit of what the Big Ten did yesterday in terms of their players coming out with their list of demands and requests of their conference. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Get two tickets for two parks for the price of one. That's two tickets for the price of one for Beach Bend and Splash and Lagoon Water Park on sale now. Go to thegamenashville.com and click on the Beach Bend Buy One, Get One free ad to purchase your tickets now for only $37.99. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning. And Joe, some news yesterday coming out of the Big Ten. We saw earlier this week with the Pac-12 releasing from their players, some of their players in the Pac-12, a list of basically requests and demands of their conference on the Players Tribune. You know, coming out and saying, you know, we want, you know, these regulations put in place for COVID-19 protocols, all these different opt-out policies that they want to have, health insurance, all these different things that the Pac-12 came out with that we discussed earlier this week. And we were wondering if there were players in other conferences that would follow suit. Well, the Big Ten has. Their players came out yesterday also on the Players Tribune and came out with their list of requests and demands of their conference. I thought the Big Ten list was a little different in terms of, number one, they're not threatening to opt out or sit out if these requests and demands aren't made.
Right.
But number two, you go through the list of some of these demands that the Big Ten players have put out there in terms of, you know, just the oversight and transparency of COVID-19 testing and protocols, you know, trying to make sure that everybody in the building is wearing a mask, which should be kind of common sense anyway at this point, you would think. Like, there's not a whole lot in this list out of the Big Ten, which is that crazy. Like, it even goes as far as to say, like, if you're a player, there needs to be some assurances in place that if you are a whistleblower in terms of, like, what's going on with your athletics personnel not following protocols, like, you should be protected from that. Like, I think that's pretty much common sense as well. So I go through this list of the demands that the Big Ten players have come out with. I don't think there's much on here that's that crazy or that far out of left field.
No, it's a much more sensible list. Again, like you said, there's no opt-out threat. So some people look at it and say, well, if you don't have some sort of consequence, then
what's the incentive for, yeah.
But to me, this still just illustrates what they want, and I think it all makes sense. I don't see anything on this list that is, like you said, out of left field. And this also, compared with the Pac-12 one, it was kind of like how many players actually were involved in this? You know, there were a lot of players after that came out. You saw like tweets of support.
Yeah.
I'm playing. I'm not part of this group, but good for you guys.
Right.
This looks like it's a much more concerted effort of getting a lot of people involved and on board.
And it says it's over 1,000 Big Ten football players.
Right. And I believe the Pac-12, like, at first it was a dozen or so.
Right.
Something like that. So that it's a much more sensible thing. I mean, some of the revenue stuff, again, from the Pac-12, it's not right now possible to do it. You know, and the stuff about, I mean, look, I think Larry Scott should take a pay cut too, but
you know, right. it's not going to happen.
Yeah, at this point, yeah, it's not going to happen. This stuff all makes sense, and it really is just the idea of as much safety as you can provide and as much protection in terms of preserving athletic eligibility, you know, the scholarship and roster spot. Who opts out or is unable to play more than 40% of the games. You know, the out-of-pocket medical expenses related to COVID. All these things. Like you said, whistleblower protections, penalties for noncompliance. I mean, all that stuff I think makes sense. Some of it's in place. Some of it should be in place. And, you know, this, you look at these demands and it may be no-brainer, but then you look at what people are alleging at Colorado State.
Right.
And that's why, like, I I'll be shocked if we hear about stuff like that at an SEC. Well, okay, I'll be surprised. Maybe I shouldn't say shocked.
Right.
But it's hard for me to imagine that people at these Power Five schools that I think, let's talk media again, have a lot more scrutiny on them than like a Colorado State would even think to go there. But it's still good to have these things sort of talked about and laid out there. And Kevin Warren, the new Big Ten commissioner, has been very receptive to this, it seems. You know, we talked to Chris Vanini about, you know, UConn, Randy Edsall, and how he said, like, we don't listen to players. So why don't we ask them and see what they think? That seems kind of important.
Right.
No matter what you think about the whole playing players thing, they are a big part of this process. They are technically the labor here. So why don't we see what they think? And, of course, UConn has bailed out of football at this point. But it's just – it is part of the larger story of that changing for the better for college football.
Yeah, and, like, there's some player assurance requests in here that – and there's one in particular who I'm not sure if this is already in place or not. If it's not, I think it should be an automatic medical red shirt for any player who misses any competitions due to a positive test or a mandatory quarantine due to contract tracing. Like, in this situation, like, you're playing, you're putting your body out there on the line. Obviously, you're under scholarship. I get that. There are things that come with that. There are benefits that come with that. But you're putting your health and your body on the line to go out there and play college football in the middle of a global pandemic. If you do get a positive test, if you are forced to go into a quarantine, you know, for a mandatory quarantine due to contract tracing, you should be able to have a medical red shirt at that point, because this is a very different time, a very different circumstance. Like, you know, you go out there, you break your leg in practice before the season starts, you're going to get a medical red shirt. You should be able to have that same opportunity with COVID-19 and everything going on right now. I'm not sure if the Big Ten or any other conference has thought about that yet or has put that in place, but that I think that was a very smart request from the players that they put out there.
No, absolutely. And look, we're going to talk about – Vanini brought it up, and we've been talking about it a lot, this idea of the students coming back, college kids. Can you – what can realistically be expected of college kids in terms of just staying away from each other, isolating themselves, not doing things that college kids do?
Right.
Trying to imagine myself in college not doing things college kids do. It's not easy, okay? So that's understandable. And I think whenever things happen, we're going to think, oh, there's some keg party like at Rutgers. But that's not necessarily the case. Again, you can get it so easily. Nashville SC had a few cases. We have no idea if that has anything to do with going somewhere you shouldn't have gone, or if it was like you went to the store and it picked up paper towels and you picked it up.
Right.
So everyone's going to jump to they must have done something wrong. This is college kids. It's not necessarily the case. It's also not necessarily the case that they're just going to have a cold for 3 days and be over it. This Indiana player, Brady Feeney, he's a freshman lineman. His mom put something on Facebook about all he's gone through battling the virus. It's terrible. I mean, he's had some serious breathing issues. They've told him he has possible heart issues lingering from this. That is one of the things about COVID that they're still trying to figure out, but heart and lung lingering issues, one of those things. For anybody who just wants to talk about death, there's a lot of death, by the way. But if you just want to talk about death rate or young people probably not dying, there's more to it than that. So you got to take this stuff seriously. And it may be a small number of people, but again, we're talking about grinding through and pushing forward a season in this environment. And so all these things that the Big Ten players asked for, I think are reasonable at the very least and should be taken seriously.
Joe, we talked about the Big Ten coming out with their schedule. The Ohio State-Michigan game's been moved from late November to, I think, the middle of October. But you look at it, and it's the schedule is kind of interesting in the way it's constructed. I think it's scheduled to start September 5th, which is much earlier than some of these other schedules that we've heard rumored to start. Like the SEC, I think they're thinking about starting September 26th.
Yes.
Now, the Big Ten has taken a different approach in terms of, yeah, technically, I guess they could start on September 5th, but there's a lot of open dates and moving parts involved in their schedule where they can move games around if they have to? Are you surprised at all that the early start date of September 5th is still on the table for the Big Ten?
Well, and there's some earlier too, right?
Yeah, like
there's
the third, I think.
Some,
yeah.
Well, no, there's some week zero games, I think, that actually have been recently announced, like August 29th.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, either try to get them in, or I think the SEC approach has been buy time, maybe it'll get better,
Right.
Obviously, I think from the SEC perspective, students come back, and so you can see then around early September, you can kind of see, okay, has this been a problem? Is everybody having outbreaks, or are we okay to play? I get both approaches. I kind of do like the idea of going earlier so you can move things, because you're kind of locked in when you start that late. You're laughing about something.
Our good friend Bob on Twitter, who's a loyal listener to our program here, has tweeted in a question for us both, says, can I get a medical red shirt from watching the Preds if I smash my hand with a hammer while watching them? That's a good question.
So is this like...
Is he medical red shirt eligible at that point?
Is he part of a group of Predators fans putting a proposal out now of, you know, different
demands?
Medical... Yeah, demands for... Yeah. That's a good question, Bob. We will look into that.
Yeah.
We'll submit that to the NHL, too.
We'll see if we can't come up with an answer. You know, maybe we could put together a list for the NHL. I wonder if they'd respond.
Yeah.
Probably not.
We've been complaining about their media access today. We can talk about medical health
medical
for fans
for
who
fans?
Smash themselves with a hammer.
Yeah, we'll put that on the list. When we come back, Teresa Walker from the Associated Press will join us. She covers all things Tennessee sports. We'll get into the Grizzlies, the Preds, the Titans, everything going on in the world of sports right now with Teresa Walker. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.